Welcome to the Nunks Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, and we are diving into the NFC questions that will define the Dynasty season here. It's going to define how we think about maybe the next year or so, right? As we're looking into the future, things that we want to know. Is Daniel Jones the answer at quarterback for the New York Giants? Seems unlikely. It's the team declined his fifth-year option. He has shown no growth. 6.6, 6.6, 6.7 yards per attempt as a passer the first 3 years of his career. Again, you could make arguments for him. You could say, hey, the scheme wasn't that good. Hey, the receivers weren't that good. Right? Like, there's a lot of headwind that he's been going into. This year should be the best situation he's had. A healthy Barkley, a better receiving core. Brian Daboll is their offensive coordinator. A new GM in Joe Sheen from the Bills. All those things, like, that sounds like much better. Those also sound like, hey, these are two new guys that want to hire a new quarterback. You know, draft a new quarterback or get a new quarterback. So there's a lot there. And I wonder, like, if we should really do an index of, like, hey, if we could put it at different spots. I'd be super curious about, like, what we would think about this. Like, let's put a landing spot of, like, 7.2 yards per attempt. We'll just pick a general number. 7.2 yards per attempt. Does Daniel Jones keep his job? Does Jalen Hurts keep his job? Does Tua keep his job? Like, how does that get, like, does Justin Fields keep his job? Like, does Jared Goff keep his job? Like, we sort of use those and think about that as a metric and then maybe move it around, right? 6.8, like 7.8, like, sort of where do we think about these guys in terms of, like, what success looks like? I'm super interested because I actually think that Daniel Jones might have, like, the hardest situation to actually get to accomplishing whatever success, whatever a long-term contract would look like because of the new head coach, because of the new GM, because of the declined fifth-year option. Like, they're going to either have to tag him or come to a long-term extension with him. Like, there's just a lot there for him that I think he actually has a higher bar to clear than a lot of these other guys do. I think it's going to be tough for him to do it. So I don't think he's the answer, but I'm super curious about, like, what this offense looks like. And maybe, do they have to go out and kind of reset the clock a bit too? Their franchise does. Are they able to sort of replenish quarterback with someone other than Daniel Jones? I'm really interested by this because I think this team could be good, but might actually need a good reset here over the next, like, 12 to 24 months to sort of clean their books up and go forward, and whether that's Daniel Jones or another rookie quarterback coming in or some other quarterback coming in. Is Jalen Hurts a franchise quarterback? Lots of franchise quarterback talk. Lots of, right, the questions that define the NFL. You know, who's taking snaps? Who's throwing the ball? Jalen Hurts gives the Eagles a huge edge. He's a middle-of-the-pack starting quarterback on a rookie deal. This allows the Eagles to make major moves to push their chips into the middle of the table. $100 million contract for A.J. Brown. You saw it this week, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, right? Like, just able to have the cap flexibility to really push the chips in because he's making next to nothing as compared to someone making $30-plus million a year. The bill will come due after the 2023 season, and after the 2022 season, that'll be when the contract negotiations begin. Will Hurts play up to the cost that he will demand, or will Philadelphia be willing to open the pocketbook? Super interesting question, and honestly, this team is put in a situation where looking forward about how quarterback decisions are made in the NFL, it is a fascinating intersection between what I would consider a good franchise and a really interesting quarterback profile. And I think we can learn a lot from the situation and how they handle it. So really looking forward for Jalen. I'm rooting for Jalen Hurts, but really looking forward to seeing how the situation plays out. Is CeeDee Lamb a wide receiver one in Dallas? He's a top 5 wide receiver in Dynasty before posting a top 12 seasonal finish. Lamb has more of a limited role than his cost actually would suggest. In 24 games that both Lamb and Michael Gallup have played, Lamb has only played more snaps than Gallup in three of them. The team, and I believe the last one was the one that Gallup was actually hurt in. The team moved on from Amari Cooper, and Gallup is working his way back from that injury. This leaves Dallas dependent on Lamb producing like a wide receiver one when he hasn't done so yet. If he's not actually the wide receiver one, he's likely to disappoint his dynasty cost. So really interested there. It feels a little bit like it's different, but it feels a little bit like how dependent the Ravens are going to be on Rashad Bateman. It feels a little bit like that. I think Lamb's obviously proven to be better, but we don't know if he can really take that big sort of step up to be a wide receiver one, and this is going to be a big test. How is the Washington quarterback situation solved? I found this fascinating. Since Dwayne Haskins was drafted in 2019, Washington has started Haskins, Case Keenum. So Haskins for 13 games, Case Keenum for 8, Colt McCoy for 1, Alex Smith for 6, Kyle Allen for 4, Tyler Heinicke for 15, and Garrett Gilbert for 1. They also started Ryan Fitzpatrick for 1 game as well. Just an incredible, incredible roller coaster since 2019. And this is like predated this. It's the 2019 was the Dwayne Haskins mark of demarcation there, or line of demarcation. The team traded for Carson Wentz in an attempt to get their franchise quarterback and really sort of steer this ship straight. Wentz is probably better than his reputation from 2021. I think, and I don't know if like, you know, you think about guys like Greg Norman, or you think about guys like Vandeveld, the guy that just absolutely imploded on himself at the 72nd hole of the British Open, and like, you know, hit the ball in the water and like went in after without shoes on, you know, that whole fiasco there. You just think about guys that have fit Buckner, like Bill Buckner, and think about guys that have just failed in like super famous ways. But when you actually look at their whether it's their career or whether it's, you know, the rest of the rest of their accomplishments, it actually is better than we remember it, because they're defined by so much of the bad stuff. I can honestly not believe that I'm finding myself in the situation where I'm the person that is saying, hey, maybe we're like being too hard on Carson Wentz. Considering like at the beginning of this, I was actually the one that was being the harshest on Carson Wentz. Like, I was on the Carson Wentz is overrated bandwagon. And like, now I've sort of come, well, like maybe he's not as bad as we think he is. I think the throwing left-handed stuff and getting like pick sixes on that, like some of the dumb stuff that he gets himself involved with, like he's fighting with teammates and like in the media, like all that stuff has left a stench on Carson Wentz's career that, honestly, if you just sort of look at the numbers of it, he's probably better than we give him credit for. Is he an elite player? I don't think so. Is he like a very good player? I don't think so. Is he a good, like, is he an acceptable quarterback? If he's not causing a headache, if like there's not that friction, like everyone, yeah, I worked in a toxic work environment. And you would, when you left, like everyone said very similar things. Like, I can sleep better. Like, I'm not nervous to go into work. Like, my blood pressure is down. Like, you just hear the same things. And it signals a very toxic work environment. You hear the same things about Carson Wentz. And, listen, I'm not there for the meetings. I'm not there, but it's like all of that stuff has left a cloud hanging over Carson Wentz that I think is probably worse than what he's actually done on the field. So I'm really interested to see sort of how this, he can outperform his cost. But it's going to be hard to do so if he doesn't have longevity. So there's not a ton of contractual security. And there's a good chance that the team, like, they could be picking, he could play himself almost like I thought with Fitzpatrick last year. He could play himself into a multi-year year role. Fitzpatrick wasn't able to do that because he got hurt. But Wentz could do that Or they could find themselves picking at the top of the draft. Like, I think it's a really interesting, like, this team. I know a lot of people are sort of poo-pooing Dallas. Like, if Philadelphia doesn't work, like, in Washington's good, like, Washington can win this division. And, you know, we might think about Wentz in a different way. So I'm really interested to see how they sort of get after this quarterback situation. All right. We can speed some of these up a little bit more, but I thought that Wentz one, I just been thinking about Wentz a bit. What is Chicago's plan at quarterback? They traded up for Justin Fields last year. Then they fired general manager Ryan Pace, head coach Matt Nagy, before hiring a new general manager in Ryan Poles and a new head coach in Matt Eberflus. The new regime has done virtually nothing to benefit Fields. They let Allen Robinson walk. They really did nothing in free agency or the draft outside of like Velus Jones to really sort of amp up the offensive skill set to build around Justin Fields. And like I think that opens a real question about like the team's commitment. Again, they're in a situation where they have to kind of clean up their books and use 2022 as an exploratory year to see, hey, is this a solution for our problems? Is this a player that can actually be our franchise guy? It might be tough to actually discover that without a good set of offensive skill players around him. So I'm interested to see how the situation plays out. Maybe they're back in the trade market next year or in the draft market again. So be really interested to see how that goes. Is Jared Goff a long-term solution at quarterback for Detroit? You sort of put that test out, like the 7.2 yards per attempt test or whatever we want to call it. Like if you like, which of these guys is actually at a spot where, you know, that if he got to this, you know, whatever threshold we wanted to pick, like, is he succeeding? And I think like Jared Goff can really get to a spot where he is actually successful this year. It's an affordable contract over the next 2 years. There's no guaranteed money. They'll probably want to rework it. He'll probably want to rework it. I've never thought that he was a contract dump. I've never thought that about him. I think people probably give him not enough credit for him being a player. I know like he's kind of in the, he's like a less personally attacked version of Wentz. You know, there's like this very vitriolic response to Wentz for a variety of reasons, justified or unjustified. Like you just see teammates sort of trashing him, and you see stuff that's not, you know, you see old colleagues like coaches and stuff sort of dump on him on the way out. That hasn't happened with Goff, and I think that like there's some stuff that maybe him and McVay didn't get along or like at the end and stuff like that. But by and large, I don't think that Goff has sort of that negative cloud over him. And like, he's probably better than we give him credit for. And when you start stacking up the quarterbacks on the walk in the face of the earth, he's a top 20, 25 guy. And like, where does that sort of leave him going forward? I'm super interested for that. Like, I think this team could push for a playoff spot. And if they do, like he might actually find himself in a multi-year window with this team. And like they kind of struck gold from a situation that wasn't expected to do so. Again, I don't know if he changes the course of their franchise, and ultimately maybe they want to reset the clock, the contract clock and all of that. But I'm really interested to see, like, he's got a fighting chance to win this job long-term. And I'll be super interested to see how that unfolds. All right, next one up here is, who's the wide receiver one in Green Bay? Green Bay lost Devontae Adams by a trade to the Vegas Raiders in March, in like the week that wouldn't stop in March. And now the offense has an Adams-sized hole in the receiving corps. How the team will address the position is interesting. Brought in Sammy Watkins, drafted Christian Watson, drafted Romeo Doubs. How does this situation get filled? Like, maybe it's not necessarily one person, but what is it like over the final act of Aaron Rodgers' career? Because I think it could be pretty lucrative. What's the plan at quarterback for Minnesota? Like Chicago, the Vikings have a new GM, Kwefi Adofo-Mensah, and a new head coach in Kevin O'Connell. Unlike Chicago, they actually agreed to a one-year extension with a no-trade clause for Kirk Cousins. essentially locking him up, like essentially tying him to a starting role next year. He's tradable in 2023. They could do it. He'd have to agree to it. It probably would include some sort of extension for him, you know, at his new team. There's I think a lot of like there's a big direction, a big split in the road next year in terms of which direction they're going to go. This is a team again that could make the playoffs. Like this is a team that could outkick their expectations, right? Kick their coverage, if you will, right? Really overproduce if things sort of really could come together, and they sort of have that superstar wide receiver to really put an offense on its back. I'm super interested to see how this goes. Again, Cousins is one that's a little bit on the Wentz side of like kind of there's a lot of talk about him, and we'll see sort of how that goes. But there's like if it goes poorly, like they could move on from him in 2023 via trade, something they negotiate with him. Dalvin Cook is lacking really contractual security here, and Justin Jefferson will be approaching an extension. Right. So all of a sudden, like this could really look different in the next 12 months in a way that, I think has a wide range of outcomes. I don't think Justin Fields in Chicago has that, like, hey, they could go to the playoffs or they could play deep into January. Minnesota could conceivably do that. So I'm super interested because it's a really wide range of outcomes. Who's the starting quarterback for Atlanta? Probably not on the roster, but listen, they've got Kyle Pitts, they've got Drake London. Desmond Ridder should get a look-see sooner rather than later if they think it's even possible. So we'll see how that goes. I think they're unlikely to win the job. Like this team could probably pick in the top five of the draft, maybe even higher than that, and really probably select a franchise quarterback. So we'll see how this looks, and they need to see Ridder sooner rather than later to make a fully informed decision about him this year. Is Baker Mayfield the future in Carolina? Carolina's had a difficult time trying to figure out the quarterback position in the post-Cam Newton era. Baker is their next attempt. There's Darnold, right? There's been, you know, they took shots on guys in the draft as well. Kind of run the gamut of struggling through this. They've tried to address it in trades and it hasn't worked out. So this is the next attempt, and I'll give them credit. They keep sort of firing shots at it. I don't think they're doing it well, but they've gone with Bridgewater, which seemed like a waste of money when they did it. Like they went with Darnold, which again seemed like a waste of money when they did it, but at least they're sort of casting a wide net and not being stuck on. I will give them credit. When they figure out that they don't have the answer, they move on. They haven't made decisions that are like remotely close to the right answer yet. So we'll see how this Mayfield situation goes. He could find himself without a starting job after 2023 if this goes bad. But they could find himself in actually a pretty good offense if this works out. So, again, I think he's got a pretty wide range of outcomes too, and in a way that Cousins doesn't, because Cousins is going to be a starter in 2023. Mayfield, very realistically, could be a guy that doesn't have a starting job in 2023. The New Orleans Saints look in the post Sean Payton world. Some of the key pieces there in terms of Carmichael, their offensive coordinator, Dennis Allen, their defensive coordinator, now head coach. Some of the pieces are still there. You've got Kamara, you've got Michael Thomas. Like you've got some of these guys. What's the team look like? Like what's the offense look like? The team was the most run heavy team in the league last year after changing from Breeze to Jameis Winston, and without a full cast of characters at the wide receiver position, they went out and addressed wide receiver by trading up a lot for Chris Olave, adding Jarvis Landry in free agency, getting Michael Thomas back. They got Alvin Kamara, right? Jameis Winston's returning to health. So lots of stuff here. Like there's a lot of moving pieces in this offense, but one that I think could really be pretty good over this season, and honestly could compete for a playoff spot and actually could compete in the NFC South if you're a little skeptical on Tampa here. Speaking of Tampa, what's the plan after Tom Brady. Brady's got a 1 year contract left. You know, he's going to be a free agent in 2023, could choose his own destiny. There's rumors that he'll play elsewhere. Like, retirement's not an impossible conclusion to come to. We've seen some of these guys go quickly too. Like, we've seen Peyton Manning go quickly. We've seen some of these other guys go quickly. Again, Brady's healthy, so that might be, you know, a benefit for him, and maybe he can not go quickly. But we've seen some of these guys go rather quickly in terms of their career decline at the end. Is Brady going to be in Tampa's future, right? If he's not, sort of what does that plan look like? Because it's closer to the end. It's whether it's this year or next year, like it's coming. And what's the plan after that? Be super interested to see how they address it. What's the future look like for Arizona's offense? DeAndre Hopkins is 30 and he's coming off a suspension. Zach Ertz will be 32 in November. AJ Green's 34. Overall, the skill position players are aging and the team could be quickly very vulnerable. Like, all of a sudden you could come back next year and look at this team and be like, wow, like they've got a lot of money sunk into guys that are very old very quickly. You know, they have Trey McBride. They drafted him. They traded for Marquise Brown. So they're doing work. They've got Rondale Moore. Like, they've got some other pieces, but I don't think they're true answers, right? Like, they aren't true. They're more role players. They're probably more situated as role players, at least at wide receiver, than they are sort of legit wide receiver one. So we're definitely going to look at how that changes here, especially now that you're paying Murray the big bucks. What's the situation on Matthew Stafford's elbow long term? He's 34. He's dealt with elbow and arm soreness throughout the offseason. The soreness has been an ongoing issue, and it's been going on all season. Again, I'm no doctor, right? I'm not going to be able to sort of give you heavy analysis on you know, whatever, it's tendonitis or whatever it is. However, like, that stuff can go, like, as someone that experienced that, that can go away and should go away with some rest. I just find it curious that, like, he had the off season and we knew that this was going to be a problem heading into training camp. I am surprised that we're here has always sort of been my thought, because if 2 or 3 weeks would have sort of made this situation go away, like, how did that not happen? And if it's not 2 or 3 weeks that makes this go away, or a month or 2 months, or, you know, whatever it is where you're putting the football down, is there something else going on there that is going to be, you know, are we looking I don't think this is true, but are we looking at some sort of, surgery, right? It doesn't seem like it's a Tommy John type deal, but are we looking at a surgery here? Are we looking at something where we're going to be in a degenerative elbow condition? Like, the whole situation's weird, and I think that there's lying going on, and I can't quite figure it out. But I'm interested to see sort of what his elbow looks like long term. And is this going to be a chronic yearly thing? It shouldn't be if they're telling the truth, is sort of what I would gather from it. But I'm open to the idea that we need to be skeptical here. So that's really the big concern that I have going forward. All right, next one here is, how is Trey Lance actually progressing for San Francisco? After an offseason of Jimmy Garoppolo basically being, cast away, and the team, transitioning and basically saying that this is Trey Lance's team now. They had Garoppolo practicing on, like, the far field, throwing to, staffers, as he was sort of rehabbing this surgery. They spent the whole offseason developing and trying to grow Trey Lance. And what is their response to that? We're going to rework Jimmy Garoppolo's contract and bring him back. No, the only way that you can look at that and be like, oh, that's not like a sign of concern. The only way that you can sort of see that arc in any sort of employment situation as anything other than like, oh man, like we don't know if we've got the right answer here at our guy that we're sort of banking on. The only way that you look at that situation and don't see some concern is if you're playing fantasy sports, right? Like you know, if it's a CEO of a company and we're sort of moving out the CEO and like, hey, we're going to make him like, you know, the chairman of the board, and then, but then he's going to retire and, you know, we got this new guy coming in and, you know, we sort of have this transition phase. It's going to be, I don't know, it's going to be like a year, 18 months. And now we're like, we're 9 months into this thing. And all of a sudden, like, we're not necessarily transitioning this old CEO and this old, you know, this guy that we made the chairman or whatever, you know, is like a sort of emeritus position. We're not transitioning him to retirement. We're sort of bringing him back to, he's gonna do, you know, he's gonna be in charge of some supervision stuff here. Like, he's just gonna, like, he's, yeah, let's just see what he's gonna do some evaluation of the company. Like, you know, he's gonna put himself on a couple of committees. Like, that's not a good sign, right? That's not a good sign of the progress of how this transition's going. Lance is a top 15 dynasty asset. And honestly, like, it has nothing to do with Lance. I have to go back and look, and I went like 10 years back and I didn't find a good example of a team drafting a quarterback that had a bridge guy in place that didn't turn the keys over the next year. The sample's not huge, but I don't remember and I can't find anything where it was like, hey, yeah, we're going to keep the sort of incumbent bridge guy here for a second season. I really remember that happening, even with like positional converts like Ryan Tannehill. They came in and started right away. So, you know, Mahomes, Alex Smith, they moved on from, like Lamar Jackson, they moved on from Flacco. Right? Like, I don't remember there being this sort of incumbent veteran guy, especially that started as many games as Garoppolo did. It's just a weird situation. And, you know, you spend a top 15 dynasty asset. You know, someone was like, oh, you're unduly harsh on Trey Lance. Trey Lance has thrown like 400 balls since he has left high school. And almost all of them were in Division I AA. Like, if you're not skeptical on that, right, if you don't look at this information and be like, I mean, listen, like, as a base rate play, he's got to be below it. He's got to be below a top 10 base rate play. He has to be, just because there's so much uncertainty. Again, could his top 10% be exceedingly high? Sure, but like, his median's got to be lower than the base rate. Like, he came from totally off the radar from a non D1 school. Like, there's a lot of a lot of concern there. And, you know, we know some other stuff. Like, he's a really easy, like, Trey Lance, from the research that AOD has done, like, it's not a hard thing to figure out, right? Like, this is a really easy application. You have a guy who, on one hand, has done basically nothing in his career. He hasn't hit, he hasn't done anything. And at the exact same cost in RDP over the past month is a quarterback who's done it multiple times. He's done it multiple times for a top six seasonal finish. He is on a long-term contract. We sort of know who he is. And like, the answer to that question historically is a smashing success. If you find yourself in that position, you should do it every single time. And you take the guy that has done it, because it is such a massively better profile. It is such a massively higher ceiling. It is a much secure floor. You don't have huge misses. You don't have big whiffs. And people are taking the Lance side. People are sort of poo-pooing that proven established profile of Dak Prescott and saying, like, I want to reset the clock with Lance because I think he has a higher ceiling. He's got, if you don't realize that he's got a drastically lower floor, you haven't been paying attention. And I think the fact that Kyle Shanahan stood there and watched this offseason, and you know, there's some questionable quotes that he had about Lance and some stuff to Peter King recently. It's enough that you shouldn't have spent a top 15 pick. Like, if you listened to me, you wouldn't have done that. And again, this is AOD applied. Like, you don't do that. It doesn't matter who the player is. You don't do that. Because honestly, he can't go up that much in cost this year to next year. And he's not going to be that much more secure, even if he does like a top eight finish next year. Like, this, you know, this upcoming year, like, he's not going to be a ton more secure, right? It's just, it's too much to pay. And especially when you can get proven profiles for at that cost or cheaper. And now we're sort of seeing there's some skepticism from San Francisco. There's no other way that you can read that. Again, that does not mean he's a bust. It does not mean he's going to be a bad player. But it's really tough to see, you know, the guy that they were going to basically just kick to the can, like, he would basically put in his retirement papers and be like, hey, you know what, we're going to tear those up and bring him back. Like, that's not a good sign. That is not a good indicator going forward. All right, last but not least here, we've got Seattle. Drew Lock and Geno Smith were entrenched in a fierce quarterback battle that Geno Smith has won. Is Geno Smith good enough to play them out of like a top five pick in this draft? I'd be super interested to see how that goes. They've got decent weapons, and all of a sudden, like, if you put a good rookie quarterback in that offense, like, again, assuming that keeps Tyler Lockett, like, his contract is such that you're probably not going to cut him. Like, maybe he's a trade piece or something like that, or you just keep him there. But otherwise, he's just, like, he's probably there with you for a while. And if that's going to be the case, like, all of a sudden, like, you've got Fant, you've got DK Metcalf, Lockett, you've got Kenneth Walker. Like, you could do a lot worse than have this situation as your quarterback, you know, for a rookie quarterback coming in the 2023 class. So super interested to see how that goes, because, again, maybe the situation's not great and DK Metcalf actually falls in cost and becomes a buy. Like, I think he could actually legitimately become a buy pretty quickly if this thing sort of looks like it's going off the rails. So I do think that there's some opportunity there. And honestly, there's probably opportunity for a guy like Fant too. Like, if we think Geno Smith's at all competent, Fant's probably a value at this point. So we'll see how that plays out. And I'm looking forward to that. A lot of quarterback questions here that we discussed, and all the 16 questions there for the NFC. So that'll do it for this edition as we get real close to the NFL season. Till next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.